Hello and welcome to See For Yourself, a podcast brought to you by UK charity, the Cystic Fibrosis Trust. I'm your host, Lucy Baxter, and I myself also have cystic fibrosis. I'm one of over 10,800 people in the UK living with CF. Now, CF is a genetic condition that causes a buildup of sticky mucus in the lungs. So that means I can experience a range of different symptoms, like feeling more breathless and tired, to struggling to put on weight and getting bad chest infections. I was diagnosed with CF at just over 2 years old. It is a part of my life, but it's not my whole life, and it most certainly does not define who I am. In each episode of See For Yourself, I'll be having a virtual chat with others in the CF community. We'll be talking openly and honestly about a whole range of topics, from exercise and employment to parenting and mental health. We'll also hear from CF experts who will be sharing their knowledge and advice for everyone affected by CF. See For Yourself is all about sharing honest insights into life with cystic fibrosis, the good, the bad, and everything in between. I'll be sharing some of my own experiences too, but it's important to say that my views are all my own and not necessarily that of the Cystic Fibrosis Trust. If you'd like to get in touch to share your thoughts on the podcast, we'd love to hear from you, so please email us at podcast@cysticfibrosis.org.uk. This episode features conversations around not being able to benefit from modulator therapies and some talk about life expectancy. If this is something you don't want to hear right now, don't worry, maybe skip this one and tune in for our next episode, which will be coming soon. If you'd like to speak to someone, the Cystic Fibrosis Trust has a helpline and you can call or email to chat to one of their team. They can provide information or support with any aspect of cystic fibrosis, a listening ear, or just be there to talk things through. You can call on 0300 373 1000 or email helpline@cysticfibrosis.org.uk. There are so many people at the CF Trust who want to help you, so don't be afraid to talk to them if you're struggling. Today's guest is the lovely Lizzie, mum to 16-year-old Isaac who has CF. Families experience and cope with CF in a number of different ways. The journey is not predictable and every child and every story is different. It was an absolute pleasure to chat to Lizzie over a cup of tea about her own experiences of parenting, what she's learned along the way, her advice for other families, and her hopes for the future. So without further ado, let's welcome to the podcast, Lizzie. So Lizzie, welcome to the podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm okay, very good, thank you. Thank you for having me.
No, not at all. And it wouldn't be a podcast without having a cheeky little nosy in your video call background, seeing what's there. What have you been up to today?
I've been working today and administering home IVs for my son. So we're at home together at the moment. He's off college, managing full-time work, three children and home IVs at the same time. So it's quite full on. But yeah, the sun is shining. So it's been a good day.
And how is Isaac doing at the moment? Obviously, he's on home IVs, but is he responding well to them? Is he doing okay?
He's doing okay. He's halfway through this course. He's just recently transitioned into adult care. So there was quite a strong desire for him to go in for these IVs, but he sort of dug his heels in and decided he really wanted to stay at home. I think his doctors have chosen to pick their battles and allow him to do these ones at home this time. He's responding well. His chest does sound a little bit better, but he's also got ongoing sinus issues. He's waiting for sinus surgery. So the coughing and the sinus headaches together are just a little bit unbearable. He's struggling, but he's very resilient and calm, and he just takes everything in his stride, really.
I remember transitioning from children to adults, but I didn't really get much knowledge about what it would be like. You know, I sort of met the doctors maybe one or two times and then just kind of moved over. But that was 10 years ago now. So I think things have changed quite a bit and there's a bit more support out there. What's that been like for you as a parent as well? Because in adult clinic, they'll chat to Isaac, they'll ask him what he wants to do, they'll be helping him get more independent.
Like you, I think it's been really mixed. We did have some transition clinics, but due to the pandemic, I think we only actually saw the adult team once in person and once over video. So I'm sure it was impacted by the pandemic and it was unavoidable. And we did feel very sad about leaving paediatric care, or I think I felt very sad about it. Isaac was much, he was much better about it, much calmer. We're lucky that we're on the same site. I think in terms of the care on the ward, it's been much better. I mean, the facilities, having your own room, having an ensuite, having an exercise machine in your room, things like that are absolutely fantastic. The cross-infection risk seems a lot better managed. And that's not to say in paediatrics that they didn't take those things into consideration, but he was on a huge ward that was always so, so busy. And we would often be six children to a bay. And then when you think that's six parents sleeping with them, so you'd often be 12 people sleeping in a room at nights. And obviously they were not other CF children, but they might also be in, and they might have a cold that he could pick up. And he often did, and he would be coughing all night, keeping those children up, and we'd be kept up by the other children through no fault of anyone's, but just the facilities were not as I'm sure the staff there would like them to be. But in terms of clinic, so outpatients, most of our care and adult services so far has been via video, which in part is really good. And I always sort of wanted that, but actually I do feel like we're somewhat missing out sometimes on just someone listening to his chest. And really, you know, when we're trying to describe that cough, I often say it's like a fruity cough. It's a, you know, it's like a really deep rumbling cough. And yet without them seeing him, it's hard to describe that properly.
You'll know his cough way better than anyone else. You'll know if it's a Pseudomonas cough or if it's any type of cough, you'll know the change. It's important to note that different clinics and different hospitals obviously have different things. Like the pediatric ward I was on when I went in, we all had our own rooms and it was a special CF ward. It's important as well with the adult doctors that the rapport you have with them, and these doctors will kind of be with us. I mean, obviously they'll retire, some of the older ones, but these are the ones we'll be with for the rest of our lives. Will Isaac sort of be a bit more independent? Is it going to be a bit tricky for you to step back? What's that going to be like now he's in adults?
I don't know if this is a boy thing, but no, he's not very independent. So he is very much reliant on me to take care of the administrative part of CF life, you know, ordering all the medications, keeping track of all the appointments that we have, which is not just CF, it's also ENT and gastro and, you know, all those other teams that you see. And so he is fairly reliant. I know that they're quite keen for him to learn how to do his own home IVs himself. He's not so keen. I would quite like him to learn so that we could sort of share that responsibility. And I think that would be good for him. So I think that's something we're going to work on. But like you touched on, that whole thing of the doctor speaking to him rather than to me, I do try and sit back and be an observer. But he often says, he'll just turn to me and go, "Mum," and I'll have to answer for him. But I think, you know, he's only 17, so we're in our very early days of transitioning.
Definitely. And also during transition, I remember thinking that I had to look after myself completely independently at this point, and that I'd failed if I wasn't doing my own physio and I wasn't remembering to take everything myself and I wasn't ordering everything. And I thought that the adult doctors would think, you know, like, "Come on, Lucy, you know, book up your ideas." Whereas realistically, everyone's on a journey and everyone's their own pace. You know, I still have hands-on physio because that helps quite a lot. And my physios sometimes battle with me like, "Oh, you should try it more, you know, independently and things." And now I'm remembering to order repeat prescriptions and things like that. So I think everyone's own journey. But if we jump back to when Isaac was diagnosed, why don't you sort of talk to me about how you found out?
I don't think we had the best journey. We found out from the Guthrie test, which was the heel prick test at 3 weeks old. But we found that before then, he was losing an awful lot of weight, obviously, with the absence of Creon. And we felt like the health visitors and the midwives, they knew that he'd had the first positive test result, but they didn't tell us until they did the repeat one. And then I was told actually that he had CF on the telephone by a health visitor by accident, where she said, "Well, we're not going to come around and weigh him today because they were weighing him daily. He was losing so much weight. She said, but we've got a CF specialist coming to see you on Monday. And this was on the Friday. And I remember saying, so he must have CF then. And her saying, well, no, not necessarily. I was like, but you're sending a CF specialist nurse to my house. You know, you're telling me my son has CF. And actually the CF nurse, Joan, was absolutely fantastic. She actually turned up at my door that afternoon and said, I'm so sorry. And yes, we do think he's got CF. What do you understand about that? And we spoke to her. And as soon as he was on the Creon, he gained weight and everything seemed so much better. We were learning a lot and very sleepless. And he was our firstborn, so we were learning about being young parents of a child, as well as learning all about CF at the same time. And actually, he ended up in hospital by 8 weeks old with bronchiolitis. So we had a very steep learning curve where he was on oxygen and we were doing IV antibiotics at that age. And yeah, it was a difficult start. And I know that we were pointed towards the CF Trust and we were just said there was no pack in those days for new parents. They just said, contact the CF Trust. But they said, we will be warned, if you look on the forums, you might see stories of people with sort of end stage CF, adults with CF who are at sort of more progressed stages of the disease. Do you want to take in that information now when you've just got a newborn baby? I myself, I find knowledge is power. You know, I need to know. I worry more if I don't know. My husband was the opposite and would rather bury his head in the sand. So we had a sort of mixed approach to it.
Prior to that, did you know anything about cystic fibrosis? I think because of the campaigns and the news, there has been a lot more publicity about it, but it's still something that year 10 GCSE biology, you learn about the alleles and the genes, and that's as far as you go with it. So what did you know beforehand?
I did have a friend with CF, and actually I was doing A-level human biology where I found out through a textbook his life expectancy, and I never knew that came out of the blue to me, and it was just like a punch to the stomach. I knew that, you know, he had CF, but I didn't understand what it meant. And yeah, I still meet people all the time today that have no idea. You know, they think it might be a cognitive disease, or, you know, how does that impact his life? Or that usual thing, is that the one where you bash them? People who really don't understand what it is at all. And I'm fine about talking about it. I appreciate when people ask questions and they're honest, you know, and they're just interested. That's fine. But we certainly feel like we need to do our bit in terms of awareness, so that people, I think that would make sufferers' lives easier if people had a better understanding of the basics.
Take me back to that phone call, because getting told your child has like a genetic condition, life-threatening. I don't know how old Isaac was at that point, but over the phone as well, like, what was going through your head? Like, what were the emotions?
I mean, I remember falling to the floor. It was like a physical punch to the stomach or something. I felt so many emotions at once. I felt in some way, at least we understood what was going on. Okay, we know what this is now. We can treat it. But overwhelming sense of guilt that it was him and not me. When he was born, before we even knew that he had cystic fibrosis, I remember sort of holding him, you know, when he was a few minutes or hours old and thinking, God, I love this thing so much. I love him so, so much. And I've opened up my heart to this sort of world of worry and pain, because I will just feel I want to protect him from anything. And then to find out 3 weeks old that he had this condition and that it would affect him all of his life, it was destroying. And I think we went through a period of grief, those stages of grief where you go through denial and anger and frustration and all of those, and then acceptance, I guess. But we just had to do all of it so quickly while looking after a newborn who wasn't very well, and trying to also manage our family's expectations and emotions at the same time. You know, the grandparents were distraught as well, and we had always hoped for a big family, for example, and what did this mean for us then? You know, would we have siblings for him when we knew that we were carriers of CF that obviously we had no idea of before?
I guess you must have made a choice when you found out after going through that as you said, grieving stage. Did you kind of go through that a moment where you were like, right, Isaac's got this, there's nothing we can do about it, now let's do what we can to keep him well, to look after him and just try and live his normal life? Did that happen for you?
I'm not sure if it was one moment. I remember our consultants were very kind and spent a lot of time with us. In those early days, we were going in once a week and we would be there all afternoon, and we would see, you know, the physios and the consultant and the CF nurse and the psychologist and the dietitian, and they would sit with us for hours. I mean, they were so patient with us. We were quite young and, like I said, first-time parents. We were sort of thrown at the deep end with him being in hospital so much that first year. I felt somewhat reassured being in hospital. You know, he was in the right place and we were doing the right thing, and we were doing everything we could to keep him healthy. And he had some good years after that. He, you know, that first year wasn't indicative of what CF life would be. He had some good years at primary school before he became more unwell again. So, yeah, I just remember the whole thing as being a bit of a blur. Like, I don't remember telling people, for example. And yet I must have. I don't remember. Yeah, it's just a blur.
No, that's something I've never thought of. I'm 24, and if I like go to work, or, you know, if I meet someone, it's not the first thing I say, but it'll come out. I remember how I told people, but then that, you know, the family friends I've got that have known me all my life, like I asked one of them the other day and they're just like, well, it's just Lucy, it don't define you, but it's just all we've known. And I think that's like a good way of putting it. Just like out of curiosity, how did they teach you, you know, how to do physio on him and things like that? Because for my mum, they taught her how to do it on a Teletubby.
Really? No, we had no Teletubbies. I think it was just, yeah, chest percussion in those days, and blowing bubbles just generally through straws, anything like that. Taking Creon on apple puree, and he was colonized with Pseudomonas by the time he was 18 months. So we had quite a few years of Thomas the Tank Engine on full blast. Well, because in those days it was a big like Parry Neb, which was, you know, very noisy, and the mask and everything. So we would have to hold the mask on his face and he would watch Thomas the Tank Engine. I must have seen every episode like 100 times. Obviously these days, you know, he's had the eFlow and the iNeb and stuff like that, and things have become portable and silent and a lot easier. We're very, very close, Isaac and I. We're, I do feel like we bonded over this shared responsibility of CF. Like I never wanted him to feel alone in it. So it was always like, we're going to do this together.
You mentioned that he was sort of well in primary school. How's Isaac's CF journey been over the years, and what maybe has been the biggest challenge you've faced?
The biggest challenge when he was very small, venous access, getting PICC lines, long lines into him when he was very small. He had lots of problems with getting lines in, not sort of any kind of needle phobia, but just his veins were just not very good. So starting IVs was always very, very traumatic until he had a portacath much later, which was by far the best thing, you know, that we ever did. When he was about 9, he started to have lots of problems with DIOS, distal intestinal obstructive syndrome. So digestive blockages, basically. And that really, you know, impacts your life if you have that many that much tummy pain. And then strangely, that got a lot better. And then his exacerbations became much worse. It's sort of like we flipped from one to the other, thinking that actually he had some good years with his lungs. And yes, he was having not regular IVs, but sort of infrequent IVs throughout those years. Then the DIOS years, and then suddenly the lung years, where the Pseudomonas was just so persistent, and he started growing aspergillus and requiring much more regular IV antibiotics. And then when he was 13, we were in hospital on IVs anyway, so he was having an exacerbation, and he caught 3 viruses at the same time. Whether he caught them on the ward or before that, we don't know, but he became very, very poorly quite quickly. In the course of a day, he went from, you know, just coughing all the time to really quite breathless. And he was 13, and we ended up in intensive care and then the high dependency unit for quite some time. And he was having some help with his breathing, very reliant on oxygen for many weeks, in a wheelchair, very visibly ill. You know how it's very much, you know, like mostly an invisible disease, isn't it? But suddenly he was very visibly ill with the oxygen and the wheelchair and everything, and, you know, masked up, which in those days was not, you know, common. And he kind of had to learn how to walk again, you know, a few steps would have to follow him with the wheelchair. It all happened, that sudden decline just happened so quickly. And we had chats with the doctors then about his, you know, our expectations for his life. And at the time, I couldn't really understand it. Why were they asking us about this? Why are they asking us about our expectations for his life? You know, we've always been really, really positive as a family. We've always talked about wellness rather than sickness. We've always been really optimistic about his future and research and have had so much hope. And suddenly they were talking about home oxygen and, yeah, what our expectations were for his prognosis. And actually he got a lot better. Thankfully we got him home after a few weeks. I think the whole thing still haunts us a lot, and it has obviously led to more exacerbations much more regular IV. So he usually has IVs about 4 to 6 times a year now. And yeah, so I think that period in our life was very, very difficult, very challenging, and spooked us, I guess.
There's always one hospital admission that trumps the rest, if you will, and makes you really question, like, is this the start of the proper deterioration? For me, it was in 2018, and I'd kind of home IV'd till then and was admitted, and I tried everything, and I think it was bacterial, and like my lung function was just not picking up. And I remember just being in adults as well, like, there's no bed for your mum, and I was just thinking, gosh, is this it? Like, the symptoms of CF that you never normally acknowledge with yourself and things like that. So I totally relate to the one experience, if you will, being the worst one. So how do you cope with these ups and downs? And obviously you've got two other children as well. How is that?
I'm so sorry to hear that you went through that scary experience as well. I can't imagine what that's like, being in adult care and suddenly being without your parents. How do we cope? I think we just take everything day by day. I'm very led by Isaac. You know, I do think about the future and I worry about things that haven't happened yet, whereas Isaac very much lives in the present day. So he'll just say, well, we don't know if that's going to happen, so let's not worry about it yet. So I'm sort of led by him. He's quite a calming influence. He takes everything in his stride. He's very strong. You know, he will dig his heels in sometimes and resist treatment at times when he's not, you know, he doesn't really want to go into hospital or something, and he'll try and put it off for as long as possible. But most of the time he comes around in the end. We have two daughters having had pre-implantation genetic diagnosis tests. So we wanted to ensure that they didn't also have CF. And, you know, they're a huge strength to us. You know, we tackle things as a family. We don't all have CF, but CF is within our family and it impacts all of us. And we're always there for Isaac. And I think he feels very supported and that he's not in this on his own.
I like what you said when you said that, you know, when he was diagnosed, you and him have like such a special bond because you make sure he's not lonely and things. And I think that might be a CF mum thing. I have such a good bond with my mum as well. I always get emotional thinking about what she's done. Now I look back, when I look back at what she's done, it does make me emotional because you just think, like, you mums have had to adapt, and dads, you've had to adapt to what we've got, and you've managed, you know, that bond. I think it's a very special one.
Absolutely. I mean, we just spend so much time together. I mean, I know you must know hospital hours are so much longer than any other hour, aren't they? We play card games. We always have a giggle with the gloves. You know, we'll do anything to pass the time. We spend so much time together. And that in itself is very bonding. And I'm sure your mum's the same, but I would do anything for it to be me and not him. I don't feel guilt in the sense that, you know, we didn't know that we were CF carriers. There was no way of knowing that we would get unlucky on that genetic lottery. But yeah, if I could do anything to take it away from him, I would. It's a difficult pill to swallow, and to, you know, sit by and watch your child in pain. You know, in those early years with the venous access, I saw them sew long lines into his arm with no anesthetic, for example. I've seen him go through 5 lots of sinus surgery, which is incredibly painful. Yesterday we were in for mid-IVs needle change and they couldn't access his port, took a 3 times, you know, and he's so fantastic about it. He's so resilient, but you know, who wants to be stabbed in the chest 3 times?
If we kind of go to present day or a few years ago, now obviously CAF Trio was announced, the old Cambi Simkevi CAF Trio campaign, you know, all that news about how it would help people's life-saving, it was called. And unfortunately, it won't work for Isaac's mutation. So what's that process been like? I know it's an incredibly sensitive and emotional thing, but what's that like?
It's mostly given us so much hope. I mean, I was absolutely active in the campaign for NHS England to approve CAF Trio and all the other drugs. We felt very passionate that anything, you know, I feel part of the CF community. I've lost friends with CF and I've supported a mum who lost her child through CF. So anything that can help, you know, CF sucks. I can't think of a particular positive that you can pull from the experience that you couldn't find elsewhere in life. It's just so difficult. It impacts Isaac's everyday life and his ability to make plans and be spontaneous, or it's just, you know, just the burden of treatment, let alone the uncertainty of the future, is so difficult. But the thought that in the future we might have something that treats the underlying cause of his disease, that's fantastic and gives us so much hope. And yes, I know that we need a very different type of fix for his mutations because he doesn't form the protein in the first place. So that seems to me, with my limited layman's understanding of science, I can understand that that's a very different kind of fix that's required. But it absolutely gives us hope. And I must admit, I did feel concerned that fundraising and research might sort of drop off a cliff when they said, we've got this wonder drug that works for 90% of sufferers with CF. How fantastic, you know, and that the last 10% might be forgotten. But the work that CF Trust are doing is just absolutely fantastic. And I've been so amazingly reassured that research is just, there's such momentum behind it. We really do feel that there's something, it's just whether it'll come soon enough before, you know, that cycle of infection and inflammation in his once lovely pink lungs will come in time, that it will help him. And also, with as much as CAF Trio is so, so wonderful, and I know personally people with amazing stories of, you know, coming off the transplant list because they're feeling so much better, having children because they're feeling so much better and they can see a future for themselves, it's also bittersweet for those people that, you know, we've already lost. In the last few years especially, you think, gosh, you know, we're so close. It's wonderful and hopeful and brilliant and yet bittersweet.
So you also have a blog that you write about Isaac and the CF and things like that. So tell us a bit about that.
I think I started the blog when he was about 9. Partly it was to raise awareness of cystic fibrosis and also organ donation, which has been a sort of a strong theme in our lives, having had friends who have gone through transplant. And also I found it quite cathartic to write about our experience. And I was hopeful that it would mean I didn't need to share the same bad news with family and friends, you know, repeatedly. I'm always really happy to talk about what's happening with Isaac, but sometimes when he's in hospital, it's when you have lots and lots of text messages from people, it's lovely to know that they care, but it's somewhat easier sometimes to point them to the blog and say, full update here, everyone can see it. So I've also found over the years, it's proved to be quite an interesting sort of diary or log for myself, where I sometimes think, oh, you know, when did he last have DIOS or something? When were we last in hospital for that? And I can flick back through the blog. So it's been quite useful. And yeah, I get lots of nice feedback. It's also very good for fundraising. So we usually do one fundraising event for the CF Trust every year. treks or shaving all my hair off or events at work, things like that. And so it's been fantastic in terms of that, pointing people towards our fundraising pages. And that's not just me, that's my family and friends as well. They've been absolutely wonderful in supporting me all these years. And we've raised, you know, a fair amount of money for the CF Trust, which is fantastic.
What's your fundraising event this year then? What's the plan for the family this year?
I actually don't know yet. It's been somewhat thwarted by the pandemic. Should we do another trek? We were thinking about putting on a ball or something like that. But, you know, COVID is still part of our lives. And are we there yet in terms of doing some sort of big event? My daughters are thinking about doing something. They did 1,000 somersaults on the trampoline last year, for example. So sometimes it's little things like that. But we also do, we held a raffle at my work every Christmas at Cambridge University Press, and they've been fantastic in supporting me all these years, and we usually raise a few £1,000 for the trust every Christmas through that. That's a constant. But personal challenges, I think probably another trek this year.
I really want to do a firewalk.
Oh my lord. I've done the skydive, and that was, I'm not doing that again. I'd rather shave my hair off again than do the skydive.
Has the blog helped you on like a personal level, helping you deal with some of the things that have been said at hospital as well?
When things are very stressful and we have new news, a new culture in the lab or something, we know he's growing a new infection, I usually become quite quiet and introverted for a few days. It takes me that time to sort of process the information. And I don't particularly want to talk to people very much at that stage. I just need my own time, and I'll go out on a long dog walk, and I'll listen to some music or an audiobook. And then suddenly, within a few days, I suddenly feel able and want to talk about things. And that's usually when I'll blog. I'm mindful of the fact that I'm more likely to blog when he's less well. So I try to also blog when he is well and show the positive sides of our lives and talk about the fact that, you know, we dance around the kitchen table every day. We have fun. We have parties. The kids have their friends over. There's lots of really good parts of our lives. And they're, you know, sometimes overshadowed by CF, but by no means always. So I try and present a balanced view.
Say, for instance, if a baby, let's say today has been diagnosed with CF, what advice would you give their parents?
Two bits of advice I was given when Isaac was really little that I think were very practical but very true. One is make friends with your pharmacist, because they will be lifelong parts of your life. We have a very lovely village pharmacy, and we'll go in and pick up a prescription a little bit earlier than we're supposed to or something. We've had them even, you know, drop things in the letterbox for us. You know, they're very kind mostly and understand our situation. The other thing was that chaos in CF don't go together. So you need to be highly organized. When Isaac was very little, we printed up a chart that we stuck to the fridge, and it was literally, have you done this medicine? Have you done this physio? And we would tick it off as we went along. And, you know, we don't do that now. He's 17 and he has 27 different medications every day. We have, you know, pill sorters to kind of organize ourselves. Take the time to get yourself organized so that the everyday is sort of doable. Break it down into small chunks. Try and be a bit more like Isaac. Live for the present day and not worry too much about the future if you can.
What are your hopes for the future, and what does Isaac, does he want to do in the future as well?
He's currently studying carpentry. His attendance at college is somewhat lacking because of his infections and needing the sinus surgery, which we've been waiting for a few months now, which has been really difficult for him. As I said, he's really super laid back. He takes everything in his stride, which is something I'd love to be able to do more myself. And yeah, I mean, like I said, we're really, really hopeful. We think that there will be treatments in the future that will treat the underlying cause of his disease rather than just the symptoms, which we have at the moment. So everything in our arsenal at the moment is just symptom treating. And we see, you know, the decrease in his lung function every year. We can see the progressive nature of the disease very clearly at the moment in terms of his lung function and quality of life. I think, you know, we try not to dwell too much on lung function, you know, and the numbers. or what he's culturing at the time, but more on quality of life and his ability to just to enjoy life like the rest of us, and that the nebulizers and the physio and everything aren't taking up too many hours and stopping him doing other things in his life.
I think us with CF are a very resilient, determined bunch. I think that not much will stop us. You know, like I had a cold the other day, and even though I had to have extra antibiotics for it, someone at work was like, you should just take the day off and rest. And I'm like, for a cold? I'm like, what are you about? You know, normal people problems in inverted commas. Finally, if you were to sum up Isaac, or, you know, what makes you most proud about how he's dealt with his condition?
I'm boundless, endless in my pride for Isaac. He's funny, he's handsome, he's really, really smart. You know, he missed a lot of school, but sailed through his GCSEs without doing any revision, I might add. He's just so, like you say, resilient and flexible and understanding and caring. And, you know, I know that he feels that we're in this together. And I know he very much doesn't like to upset me. So when he's, you know, skimping on physio or something like that, and then he sees me going, he's then okay. He understands how much we want him to stay well and how much we need him to stay well, so that those future treatments that will come will still benefit him in the future, because we just need to, you know, look after his lung function now. But he just, yeah, I mean, everything that he's been through, he does seem particularly unlucky at times in terms of, you know, the dias and the sinus problems and the liver problems. He's just so, yeah, resilient, like you say.
Oh, well, Lizzie, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you and just hear from a CF parent their point of view, and also just to hear about like Isaac's inspiration of what you are and all CF parents are to do what they do. So yeah, real pleasure talking to you. Thanks for coming on the podcast today.
No, it's been a real pleasure, and good luck to you. I hope you enjoy this lovely summer.
A big thank you to Lizzie for sharing her story with us. In this podcast, we're also going to be hearing from some CF experts and putting your questions to them. Today, we have Michelle Puckey, Consultant Paediatric Clinical Psychologist at Royal Brompton Hospital. Michelle will be answering the question, what are your tips for talking to a child about CF? Over to you, Michelle.
Hello, my name's Michelle Puckey. I'm a Consultant Paediatric Clinical Psychologist at Royal Brompton Hospital. I became interested in this area of working about 10 years ago now, and we've now developed a leaflet, I've trawled the literature, so I'm hoping that what I'm going to say today will be really useful to you. Please also talk to your own CF team if you have any questions. Of course, all families are different and all children are different, and so the ways of talking with our children may be different. There's also a really good book I'd recommend by Mandy Bryan, who recently retired from Great Ormond Street and worked with people with cystic fibrosis for a number of years, and a colleague of hers called Penny Tittman, called Helping Your Child with a Physical Condition, and that has a chapter on talking with children about CF. Okay, so I hear a lot from not just parents of children with cystic fibrosis about reasons they don't want to talk to children about their physical health condition, but also parents of other children who are seen here at the Brompton. I hear that maybe they think their child's too young, they don't understand why they need to tell them, they weren't told things when they were a child, they're worried it'll make the child upset, they don't want to spoil their childhood, they don't want them to feel different, they want them to fit in. They have difficulties maybe, or worries that they may get upset whilst talking to their child. These are all really valid things, but I'm going to tell you why I think it's a good idea to talk to a child about cystic fibrosis and ask you to make your decision. So why would I? I think it encourages honesty in the relationships between you, your child and your family, friends and the child's medical team. It can help and encourage your child to talk openly with you, not just about their cystic fibrosis, but about anything else that's going well or may be difficult for them. It supports your child or the child to consider that it's okay to talk about thoughts and feelings around what may be difficult subjects about their personal health. It can improve both your, if you don't mind me saying, and your child's ability to talk with the cystic fibrosis team and others to develop skills. And it also, we know, can help with adherence to treatment and investigations. We know knowing doesn't necessarily mean that a child will agree to take their treatment, but we know not knowing is a reason that they refuse to. It avoids any misunderstandings or misconceptions about their health. Sometimes our imagination can be far worse than the reality. And it promotes their self-esteem about themselves because they know all about themselves and can work on that. It stops a child finding out about their condition from Dr. Google or a family friend. And it also comes up in Key Stage 3 at school, which is the first 3 years of secondary education. It's taught in biology classes. And it's okay. So how would I recommend you decided when and how to tell? How have you shared information, other information with children? I'd ask you how you managed important information in the past. For example, a sad death of a pet, going to a dentist, the diagnosis of a family member with type 2 diabetes. Was it managed well, do you think? How would you like to do it differently? How could you tell it was managed well? Do you have fixed ways of managing difficult news in the culture of your nuclear families, but also in more extended family? And are there cultural reasons that may affect these decisions? How will you look after yourself and allow others to do so when you're sharing the information with your child, which you will see, I hope, won't be very difficult for you, but you may have a lot of anxiety prior to that. Who's the best person to discuss it with a child? What is going on for you and your family at the moment? So hopefully you'll choose to do it at a time where things are relatively okay and not at a time of crisis. So I'm now going to mention a couple of adages. One is change is a process, not an event. And the other one is well begun is half done. And those are the two quotations that I take when I'm thinking about this area. First of all, well begun is half done. Think about establishing what I would call protected time. It may be talking time, it may be doing time, because children often like to talk about things when they're doing something else. It's called sideways talking, like going for a walk, taking the dog for a walk, baking, laying the table, driving in the car. There are a couple of reasons that I suggest this. One is sometimes children can become very preoccupied with the information, and what it's really helpful is to encourage them that it's important to get on with their everyday life. It can increase their anxiety. This can increase their anxiety and make them feel it that something they should feel anxious or worried about. Or your child may spend the next few weeks with complete dread that someone's going to tell them something else that they're going to have to sit down and really think about again. So to have protected time means it's okay to talk. It's really good to talk about thoughts and feelings about something, but not that it needs to take over your everyday lives. I would suggest that protected time is 15 to 20 minutes once or twice a week, that they have an undivided attention of an adult carer, whoever that's chosen to be, that it's planned so they know when it is, that it doesn't have to be solely about cystic fibrosis or a difficult conversation. It could be about something positive in their lives, like getting their pen license or making a new friend. It's the child's choice whether or not to use that time. So if they say, I don't really need it, that's not a problem, but the parent will always be available should they do. And if it's not protected time, that you encourage them to write down or to tell you so you can write it down, the question, and take it to protected time. So again, you're not talking about it all the time. The last thing is try not to do it at bedtime. I know this is a lovely time when we often talk with our children, but what we don't want them is to go to bed and try to get to sleep and have a lot of thoughts, difficult thoughts possibly, going through their mind. So listen to your child's cues in case they're asking questions. Think about the language you're going to use. For example, some people called physio fizzy. And I also run into the lovely talking about bugs in sputum. So children imagine little insects in their sputum, can. As I said, try to be consistent across caregivers. It probably needs repeating or checking in often. I speak as a parent myself, where all my children swore that I'd never told them about facts of life, etc. Every 6 months I checked in, whereas I know that other children can pick things up and they don't forget it at all. And then I mentioned that clinic reviews or when doing treatment can be a really great time. So what needs covering? I would suggest, but this isn't inclusive by any means, and I know that everybody's different. What's CF? It's a genetic condition. How did they get it? What parts of the body are affected, particularly the respiratory system, lungs, and the tummy, digestive, gastroenterological system? And there are other systems that can be affected. Will it go away? And fertility issues. Those are the things that I would suggest are most important to cover, particularly in the first instance, if you're doing a big appraisal of cystic fibrosis for the child. What needs to be done every day to keep well? So treatments and living healthily. And what I would encourage you to do is to try not to use language that indicates that it's a burden to do these, but that these are extra bits of personal hygiene, like cleaning your teeth or having a bath, that they need to do each way to keep themselves well. And that, of course, would include things such as physiotherapy, eating well, physical exercise, taking enzymes before eating, and various forms of antibiotic medication, vitamins, inhalers, and DNAs. Finally, I obviously need to mention the new CFTR modulator therapies, Kaftrio, Orkambi, Simkevi, Lumacafta. Hopefully I've covered them all there, but most probably not. I do appreciate that some children are not eligible. Whether or not you tell your children whether if they are eligible that children are not, or vice versa, is up to you, but I would encourage openness. It's a new medication. We're not sure what the long-term outlook is, but it's incredibly positive at the moment. So, but what's really important, in my opinion, is the message is important to take it if you're given it and to follow the guidelines about how to take it. You need to keep doing the other treatments for cystic fibrosis, even if they feel more difficult to do because the child with CF is feeling so much better. And there is current research to decide what treatments and when treatments can stop, and that will come. And to expect some changes in relation to these medications, both physically and possibly emotionally in the short term and long term, is a possibility. How would I start talking to a child? I would start talking to them as young as possible. I've already mentioned what I would do. So thinking about your language, the way you talk about things, taking the opportunity of talking about things in clinic. Most children find, as do some of us adults, find it difficult to understand what goes on inside the body. So giving clear visual facts to children via age-appropriate books can be really helpful. I do not have shares in this, but Usborne do a great Lift the Flap book. It's called See Inside Your Body, and I can't recommend it enough. We give them out to a number of the patients or siblings here at Royal Brompton Hospital, and we've only ever had very positive comments. Please, my suggestion is that you answer the child's questions in an honest and developmentally appropriate manner. If you have any concerns about understanding what developmentally appropriate means, obviously you wouldn't give the same information to a four-year-old than you would to a 14-year-old. I'm sure your CF teams would be very helpful with this matter, or you could Google it, developmental age. It's in the book that I referenced at the beginning. Mandy Bryan and Penny Tittman have done wonderful visual representations of three main stages of understanding development in children and suggestions for that. I wouldn't worry if the child's attention wanders, that's quite common, or they don't seem to hear the information, or they don't react in the way you anticipated. Children seem to be able to monitor how much information they can take in at one time, and they do take it in. But as I said, some follow-up checking that they've understood would be helpful. The child will take their lead from you by the way you talk about it and answer their questions, and also how you are with other people if you're talking about their CF. So it can always be helpful to remember that. I mentioned checking out if everything's okay and that your child has understood every 3 to 6 months. There are ways of telling if they're particularly disturbed, which I sincerely hope and my experience would indicate they won't have any serious emotional effects on their well-being. But you can also look, are they sleeping and eating okay? Are they more or less clingy? Are they happy to go to school? Are they enjoying their everyday routine as they normally would? Should give you an indication of how they're feeling after the conversation. My last tip is to look after yourselves. This isn't easy. My good colleague, Dr. Gillian Colville, who works at St. George's Hospital, talks about the oxygen on a plane analogy. So it's important to put your own oxygen on so that you can look after your child. And she talks about that in the context of emotional well-being. So if you can look after yourself, hopefully you'll be in a better place to be able to support your child with this. You're your child's buffer. You're making decisions about their treatment and receiving information that is, it can be very difficult. They're going to be possibly, probably difficult with you about their CF rather than their CF team. It's tough. It's a tough gig. And also adapting to the changes illness has made. So try to develop your own coping strategies and identify who you can talk with about it. So I hope that's all been helpful. Thank you very much if you've got all the way through. Bye-bye.
Thank you to Lizzie for sharing her story and to Michelle for her advice, and to all of you for listening. For more information on what we've talked about in this episode, or to donate and help make sure everybody with CF can live without limits, please see cysticfibrosis.org.uk/podcast. If you've enjoyed listening to See For Yourself, don't forget to subscribe, rate and review so you can keep up to date with when each episode is coming out. I've been your host, Lucy Baxter, and until next time, keep well and I'll see you soon.